Hi there, I'm Peter Kroc, CEO of Can Group based in Melbourne, Australia, and you're joining us today on Professionally Cannabis.
Where do they go? The smoke rings I blow each night. Oh, what do
it's a great pleasure to welcome to the pod today Peter Kroc, the CEO of Can Group Limited, the first company in Australia to be issued with a medical cannabis cultivation license and a cannabis research license by the government's Office of Drug Control, placing a huge emphasis on R&D and having made recent acquisitions into Europe. Peter is the perfect person to give us a view on the cannabis market in Australia and how domestic businesses are able to interact with the international market. With all this in mind, there's only one thing left to say. Peter, welcome to the Professionally Cannabis podcast.
Terrific. Great to be here. Thanks, Jonathan.
Peter, we're glad to have you. And as you know, we ask all our guests at the beginning, what led you to the plant?
It's an interesting one. And in fact, I followed in on the back of a 28-year career at Nufarm, which is an agricultural chemical company. And our managing director, Doug Rathbone, when he left Nufarm, joined the board of Can Group. And when he did the financial review in Australia, had a headline or the famous quote that Doug had gone from killing weeds to growing weed. And it was on the invitation of Doug that I met and spoke to Alan McCallum, our chairman. I came into the role of CEO some 5 years ago. Funnily enough, I didn't even understand the significance of April 20th and probably should have joined a day later to join on 4/20.
And can you give our listeners a little outline about what Can Group's been doing over those 5 years? Or perhaps you can go back even a little bit further just to get them familiar with Can.
Yeah, and Can started it was on the back of, so we're based in Melbourne in Australia, Victoria, and the Victorian government actually led the way in Australia around legislative change with medicinal cannabis in Australia. And they had the Victorian Law Reform Commission in 2015 did a study into patient access in Australia and started to lead the way, but the federal government came in and stepped over the top to ensure that Australia remained compliant with the UN Single Convention on Narcotics, which required that it be federally controlled and legislated. So when I joined in April 2016, the legislation actually was signed off by the federal government on the 23rd of February 2016, which funnily enough, I know that day because that's my birthday. So these are all very auspicious links, but the Office of Drug Control came into effect 6 months later, being the end of October 2016. And Can, we stayed up all night and made sure that we had our first applications in, and our license was then granted early in 2017, February 2017, we got the first license. So we've been involved. Can had been formed, I think, back in 2015 or maybe 2014, it was incorporated, but initially started and was growing industrial hemp to have a model showing how we were going to manage cannabis through our facility, but had a working model and came through and was the first to get a license, the research license and then the cultivation license for medicinal cannabis.
On a practical level, what would you say is the most significant implications of being that first mover in Australia with regards to the domestic cannabis industry?
Look, it definitely had us at the forefront, and it's interesting because getting the license is only the start of the process. You can't actually handle any cannabis until you get through and the Office of Drug Control issues a permit to operate in the space. And we actually were cultivating under permit from it would have been, I think, May or June. It was June in 2017 that we had the first material growing. The Victorian government and Agriculture Victoria had started prior to us, and we got the ball rolling here in Australia. They had the first activity, and as a government authority, they could start before the legislation came into effect. But they were looking to hand on to industry and show that industry was viable and could take it on. And so our first customer was actually the Victorian government, and we won the tender. Funnily enough, it was because we were the only one cultivating under permit that we won the tender, but we produced product for the Victorian government, and that got us started. But from the early stage, we also realised that we needed an industry around us. This wasn't going to be a one-horse race. So there were the first six companies in Australia, including OzCan, ourselves, I won't try and remember them all and run them off the top of my head, but we formed the MCIA, Medicinal Cannabis Industry Australia, and I've been chair of that since we founded. So Cannes played an important role at the forefront, but with the other early starters in the industry and early license holders to ensure that we could have an industry voice as well as a leading commercial, as one of the leading commercial players as well, to be able to balance that voice and role in the industry between us as a company and also the key players in the industry.
And what does the Australian patient landscape look like now, and perhaps how has it evolved over that time? Because we have had one Australian LP in our first season, but that was quite a while ago. So I'm kind of interested to know how patient growth has been.
Yeah, look, patient demand is high. Patient growth has been terrific. And the special access scheme under which we've operated, which I think was quite forward thinking of the government Department of Health to allow products that, so the special access scheme allows an unregistered product to be prescribed to specific patients. And that process normally or historically has been used for things like blockbuster chemotherapies or other treatments that are coming through, or immunotherapies for that matter, that have been developed in the UK or the US and not yet through the full process here in Australia with the TGA, the Therapeutic Goods Administration, have used that process to allow products to come through. And by putting medicinal cannabis into that same category, what we've been able to do, and it's been done on the basis that the safety profile of cannabis is fairly well understood, even though there isn't the full supporting data set that normally comes with other products going through the registration process. But it's allowed us to have access, or allow access, to medicinal cannabis that as yet has not gone through that registration process. So that in itself was forward thinking of the government and has allowed us to introduce and have product available for patients. It started from a very low base, obviously, and back in early 2018, I think there'd been something like 320 applications approved for special access to medicinal cannabis. At the A Cannabis conference that we ran recently as the MCIA, John Skerritt, the head of the TGA, announced that they had just completed their 100,000th approval for medicinal cannabis in Australia. So we have seen the terrific growth, and it reflects both doctors willing to prescribe and the improvement in understanding that's occurred throughout the with medicos, and a pathway that's become more ready for, or more efficient in terms of allowing patients to apply for and be approved for the use of medicinal cannabis. So yeah, we've seen terrific response, but we've obviously got a long way to go, and there is work starting to happen in Australia here with this year's announcement from the TGA that they were going to allow an S3 registration of CBD, so low dose CBD being allowed to be registered, which means it would be available through pharmacy. And it's once we get into that sort of area that we'll see it move into the realm of full registered products is where we'll start to see an uptick in patient use once it's gone through that registration process.
And you touched upon safety earlier, and of course safety is inextricably linked to consistency and quality of a product. Something that I was keen to ask you, and that is, what requirements were in place in terms of the quality and consistency of cannabis batches that are able to be imported into Australia? And does this differ from the product that folks like Can are able to export out of Australia? The reason I ask is because, you know, each country typically has different laws and regulations about what passes as fit for consumption for patients or for the consumer market. How do you see things here?
Yeah, it's a very good question. And in fact, interestingly on that front, so imported product into Australia at the moment needs to be responsive to Therapeutic Goods Order 93, TGO 93, which actually has a lower threshold than what Australian producers are required to produce to, and is a requirement for our exported product, which is GMP, Good Manufacturing Practice. Having just been to Canberra recently with the MCIA, we heard from the government who had asked for input, and there had been submissions going into this question of what the quality requirements should be. It looks like the government are in fact going to change TGO 93 to require that imported products meet the same GMP requirement that we have to meet here in Australia for both product that we supply domestically and anything we export. So that will bring it back to what is important in terms of ensuring that patients and medicos have confidence that the quality and safety standards are the same for product that's coming in and they're prescribing as an imported product to that which is being produced in Australia.
And is this change in regulation and stance, is this influenced by wanting to ensure that the highest quality of product for patients Is it put in place so that Australian LPs are able to compete more on price with overseas players? Or is it perhaps to do with some sort of protectionist policy to try and create the supply in Australia to be served purely by Australian players? How do you see things?
I think it's more to do with the integrity of the industry, but also for the medicos need to have confidence that they know what they're prescribing. So the idea that the quality, efficacy and safety are the three key things they're looking for. And to ensure that, that's exactly why we do have the TGA following and tracking the production of pharmaceutical products. So these clearly fit into the same category, and that's what we're looking for. And it's important that we don't undermine that confidence in the product and this as a class of medicine used in Australia. So that's really where it has its strongest fit. And the importance of not undermining that is, I think, fundamental here. So does it make a difference to the dynamics of what's shipped down here? There's no doubt that there have been some products that were bought in opportunistically, and that's not necessarily helpful, though, when a lack of consistency or a lack of supply is able to, or patients are looking for that when they go to get a repeat prescription, and if it's not the same product or it's not available because, you know, a one-off shipment was made because there was an opportunity to supply it, that's where we're looking to iron all of that out and know that we've got a legitimate industry, whether it's imported or produced locally, that they can have confidence in and have access to, and doctors know what it is that they're prescribing.
So on the topic of prescriptions, big news lately has been your acquisition of Satipharm, and with that comes a degree of IP, dosable forms. How's that going to transform Can Group? If indeed it will be transformational. Sorry to assume that, but I do think it is going to be quite a difference.
It is, and yeah, we took this as a step. It was something that we had, it was key to our strategy, and we'd been looking for an opportunity like this, and Satipharm was the perfect one for us to seize upon. The IP position is really important, but most importantly, it gives us a product that looks like a medicine that doctors are used to prescribing. So the idea of moving away from taking a number of drops under the tongue and see how you go to have something that you can dose titrate with a product that's been produced under GMP and meets the expectations of medicos, that you can have a product, the bioavailability and what the IP protected formulation brings is also something that's differentiated, which is a key thing where we were never getting into this, whether it was through the cultivation side or the dose form to deliver to patients, to just be seen as a commodity cannabis producer and an undifferentiated product at the other end. Satipharm gives us a platform that is really important, and as I said, will look like a medicine that doctors are used to prescribing, and the bioavailability on top of that gives us something that really is a point of difference in terms of ensuring we've got something that can be targeted at specific conditions, that we can take it through a registration process, and in due course that's what we will be doing, is having registered products that are absolutely specific to key conditions, and that we've been able to produce the right data set to support that.
And Satipharm is all CBD as it stands, if I've got that right. So will you be also looking to introduce THC into these formulations?
Absolutely, and that's where, in bringing the technology to Australia, that allows us to do that. So doing that under the auspices of the TGA's requirements for GMP will give us a highly differentiated position, and we will move into a range of products that include THC, because we know that is very important in terms of having that as parts of the armory for medicinal cannabis, and having a range of products that will be usable and being able to offer that to physicians so that they can prescribe and look at dose titration at CBD and THC is going to be part of that as well. So really exciting time ahead with that. In terms of Satipharm as a platform for the low-dose CBD registration in Australia, that's a great short-term opportunity that we're moving on immediately, and that's going to be important. But we're also bringing the technology to Australia where we'll have freedom to work with THC, which is currently not possible in the Satipharm range, and we'll be expanding that and working on that, and that's underway as we speak. That's exactly where we're heading with it.
And what counts as low dose?
Yeah, so it's interesting in Australia, and again, the MCIA got involved in this because the TGA originally set a maximum daily dose limit of 60 milligrams was put forward as the maximum dose, daily dose. Through the MCIA, we put a submission together and moved that to 150 milligrams a day. So We think that sits perfectly with Sadipharm in terms of the product that we have available immediately and is actually already being prescribed under the special access scheme here in Australia, but we will use that as the basis of what we do with the S3 registration in Australia.
Now, when you were acquiring Sati-Pharm, how important to Can Group was it that they are domiciled in Europe? And perhaps as an extension of that, could you talk us through your sort of European expansion plans and what that tangibly means at the moment and what the implications will mean for Can Group's sort of broader growth and expansion plans?
Yeah, well, the acquisition, we actually acquired it from Harvest One in Canada, but they'd picked it up as one of the pieces that they'd pulled together and they were looking to leverage. But with the way the Canadian market changed, they weren't in a position to do that. So what we have done is, I think it's a bit like a dose of oxygen to a severe pneumonia case, is Sadipharm were waiting to execute in Europe, and it's manufactured in a Swiss GMP facility at the moment, and that'll continue. But they're domiciled in Ireland, and the team there have got a great footprint or launching pad for us in Europe. But as you know, that's we were already working and have other activity in Europe. So this was really complementary to it, and we're going to leverage that. Is exactly what we're doing with what's already in place. So the team there has been terrific. They've been really excited to have someone come in who was focused solely on the medicinal cannabis space, which is where we saw this fit, and they've integrated already with us. We're through the initial stage of the acquisition and onboarding, and exciting times ahead and a great team that we've got on board.
Can Group, I know, is taking part in some clinical trials as we speak. Can you talk a little bit about the R&D direction of Can Group?
Yeah, so from an R&D perspective, where we've based and the capability we have here in Melbourne, where we've got access to, and our head office is right next door to AgriBio at La Trobe University, which is a public-private partnership between Agriculture Victoria, they're 75%, and La Trobe University, 25%. But the AgriBio Centre is a world-leading genomics, in fact, all of the omics, proteomics. It's a $288 million facility that services all parts of agriculture in Victoria and gives us, and as I said at the start, we got the ball rolling with Agriculture Victoria. They were a key reason as to why I think we were able to show that we had a pathway to both getting the first license and permit, and also working with them to show that industry could step in and take over from what they were doing to produce the first product for the Victorian government. But in terms of what we're doing with our accelerated breeding program and the capability that it brings, in fact, the best parallel is to, you know, agriculture or AgriBio have every dairy animal in Australia is on their genetic database, and they can now take a DNA sample from a 6-week-old bull calf and predict within 1% what its progeny are going to produce. And that capability is exactly what we're now focusing on and will be leveraging in the accelerated breeding and capability that we're looking to take cannabis through on medicinal cannabis. Because of prohibition, there has been no research done. There is, I think, very few other organisations around the world in terms of the or platforms available to leverage. There's been a lot of work done in Israel, as you know, but even there, the environment has still been stifled from a regulatory perspective, and we're looking to leverage that here in Australia, and Victoria in particular will allow us to do that. So we've got really exciting opportunities ahead with the facility that we're operating and setting up in Mildura, which is a large-scale facility. We've negotiated and got access to that facility via the ARNet, which is the Australian Academic Research Network. They've agreed to supply internet connectivity to our large-scale facility, and I see the opportunity for us to do translational research both through AgVic and La Trobe University here in Melbourne and other partners we're working with. We've made sure that we've set up a broad research network, which also includes CSIRO. It includes the New South Wales Department of Agriculture or Primary Industries. We've worked with them, and we're the lead partner in a CRCP there. So it's not just what we're doing locally here, but we've set up a broad base that we know is going to benefit more than just Can Group. It's going to benefit the industry, but we need a thriving industry to for us to thrive as well. So it has been a really strong focus of ours, an important focus, but we've only just really scratched the surface. We've we've put all of the building blocks in place, and it's what we do now and where we go from here that we're really excited about. And as you know, the whole world of cannabinoids and the role I've got to play in medicine, this isn't just a CBD and THC play. There is a lot more work to be done, and it won't all just be done by us, but I think we've set up a terrific platform to allow that to grow. And particularly in Melbourne, with the medical research capability we have down here, it is going to be really exciting to see how we can interface and work with that whole medical development side, not just in agricultural development as well. So, yeah, a lot happening down here and promises a lot, I think.
Interesting. I think the advanced breeding program, where you're predicting the progeny, or I suppose you don't call it progeny in the case of plants, before actually breeding them, that does sound very exciting. But I feel like that's probably quite a long-term thing to look for. What would you say to current holders of can stock to be looking out for? And maybe we can talk a little bit about being a publicly listed cannabis company afterwards, but in terms of the near term or the medium term, what should people who hold the stock and believe in it be keeping their ears peeled for?
Look, I think the important thing comes back to we've said all along, and we've maintained the high moral ground, I think, has been an important focus for us in terms of doing it properly the whole way through. So, as you say, all of these things, including the research side, nothing happens quickly. And the regulatory side has been huge for us as well, both in terms of establishing and getting the process working here in Australia and learning with the regulator in parallel. There's no doubt that they have had their hands full in terms of the amount of interest and the number of applications that they've had to deal with, while still trying to get those who were first through the gates, like CAN, keep them operating so that they service us, so that when it comes to things like getting permits renewed or processed, that they don't just put us at the back of the queue when there's 200 new applicants trying to get through the same process. So all of that's been a huge effort, and we've done it properly the whole way through. That has been a hallmark of ours, is that we've said we're not going to cut any corners. This has to be done properly. That's what we have done. That's what we're doing with the investment we're making in our Mildura facility, which we knew that scale was going to be important, and we've invested in and are doing that properly. And that's been the key. Clearly, what our shareholders are looking for and are looking for is for us to get into a business as usual cycle where revenue is able to be forecast and delivered on. And that's really the key thing. We're not yet into a business as usual cadence, and that's because it's a new industry, and we're developing as part of that. So that's been frustratingly slow, and a year of COVID hasn't helped with that either, because I think that has had a significant impact across the board, both with, regulators under the pump trying to deal with a pandemic around the world, because at the end of the day, this is we sit within health. We're making our way through that. We've done everything properly. It's still frustratingly slow, but we can see the light on the other side, and that's the exciting part. And to see, as now 100,000 approvals in Australia is showing that it is gaining traction and we're heading in the right direction. That's been the focus for us, doing it properly and heading there. We've still got a way to go, and we're in full swing with our facility in Mildura. Having that online by the end of this year is what we're working to, and we're on track to do that. So all of those things are parallel processing. The revenue is going to come, and we're on our way with that as well. But I know that's what they're all looking for, shareholders. And as we move forward, that will come through. And yeah, we're confident we're heading in the right direction. We've done everything right on the way through. Our shareholders have been patient, and they do understand this is a long game.
How significant would you say the retail investment market is for CAN Group and other Australian LPs? And is the way you communicate with shareholders different depending on whether they're institutional folks or retail investors, which have had sort of a huge influx, not just with CAN, but in the broader cannabis space in recent times?
There's definitely been a lot of noise in the space, and there was a bubble which the Canadians, I think, built around the whole rec market and how big this was going to be. And when that bubble burst, it had a flow-on effect here to Australia. I think the key thing here is that a lot of that heat's now come out of it. We're not getting the spruiking and the unrealistic noise coming into the space with people trying to talk it up. And that's been really important. And I think whilst and so for us, we don't have a different dialogue with institutional investors and retail investors. I do get some heat from time to time about why aren't you putting out more news, and you need to be talking this up. I don't think that's useful. I think we've tried to keep a level head, and as things have developed, we've kept the market fully informed, retail and institutional investors at the same time, and I'm not going to change from that. That's been our modus operandi, and I'm not one for putting out fluff stories or talking it up and blowing it up. So that's very much our modus operandi, and I will continue down that track. We do have some really exciting stuff coming through, as I've talked about already, and as it does come through, we'll definitely keep the market informed. But there's no point in trying to overhype it ahead of time. And I think, you know, a classic example of that relates to the down scheduling of CBD in Australia and the S3 opportunity, where unfortunately the media got hold of that as well, and I'm not sure who they were getting prodded to talk it up. But on the 1st of February, when that came into effect, you would have thought you could walk into a chemist the next day or a pharmacy and buy a product off the shelf. We know that the S3 registration process is going to take the best part of 18 months, and that should have been clear at the time that this was all talked about, but it even made it onto the nightly television news, where they say, oh, great news, this is all coming through, and people were at the chemist the next day saying, so how do I get hold of this? And that's not helpful. You know, that sort of spruiking and you know, pumping it up is not useful when people then get disenfranchised with what do you mean I can't get it today? And in fact, probably the biggest winner out of that is the illicit market, who love the hype, and people end up going to illicit sources to try and get access to product that they have no idea what it is they're getting or what process it's been through. That's where we're trying to keep the messaging clear. And as I said, it's no different to a retail investor or an institutional investor, or those who are interested in getting access to medicinal cannabis. We've got to keep it level-headed and factual. So that's what we've done.
I think we've got time for one last question. And this one's sort of inspired by those comments about perhaps the legacy market or the black market. And I guess you can feel free not to answer this one. But let's say that recreational or adult use comes to Australia, as indeed it was put to a referendum in New Zealand. And I assume that the political mores of those two countries are quite similar. So I'd say it's perhaps not impossible that it would come to pass. Is CAN preparing for a future in which that might happen? What does CAN think about it? If CAN can talk at all.
CAN.
Okay, yes, there you go. So no, we're not targeting or preparing for that, because from our perspective, it's a distraction. And in fact, it wouldn't be useful for patients who are looking for access to medicinal product or think that they can self-medicate using a recreational product. That's, I think, not in the interests of patients. And it's not what we're backing as a future model for CAN. We're absolutely keeping focused on having medical grade product available for patients, and it's going to be it's not going to be helpful to help develop that if recreational comes in. Will it change, and could it change? And clearly everyone's keeping a close eye on what's happening in the US now with the administration change over there, and things look to be moving quickly. So could the landscape change? Yes, it could. But would it be useful for patients looking for access to quality medicines? Probably not. Will we stick to our knitting and keep focused on that? Absolutely, we will. And I think there is going to be, I've said all along, there's a really important role for cannabinoids in medicine, and we plan to continue to play a key role in that in Australia and internationally, where it's clear that Australian quality product that's got the TGA stamp of approval is going to be sought after. We know it already is in terms of what we're doing into Europe at the moment, being the UK and Germany, but clearly there are broader markets, and particularly into Asia, where we know that's the case for existing products out of Australia, whether they're in this space or not, it comes and is sought after, and that's where our real opportunity sits.
Well, I think it's a great note to end on, keeping patience at the forefront of this. And I just want to say thank you for joining us on the podcast, Peter. You've been wonderful.
Terrific. No, it's been great. Thanks, Jonathan, and thanks, Oscar. Enjoyed it immensely, and happy to chat anytime.
Please take me above. Take me with you.